Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, welcome to another episode of Wim Hof Wednesdays. Today, we have a very special guest, one of the originals of the Wim Hof Method. And if you've never seen him before, well, shame on you, because you should have. He's in the 10-week fundamentals course, and he's in there every single episode. So you should definitely have watched that if you're an instructor. Dow comes with a plethora of experience, not just from the Wim Hof, but he has a bachelor's in philosophy, linguistics, and religious studies. He took his first cold bath before the Wim Hof Method when he was in China, becoming a Kung Fu master, which he could tell you more about that if you want. He's been there since 2015. We're talking about the originals. He was 22. He was a baby, and he still looks like a baby. Look at him, guys. Look at that skin. He must take baths, cold baths. He's been teaching a plethora of workshops. He's been traveling. His fundamental courses have been still rising. And he has been a part of 9 master weeks. What does that mean? That he has been training the trainer 9 times. And I got the honor to be there with him in September, along with some of you that are in the group right now. And Dow, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here, taking your time, talking about mountain safety, whether it's for a level 2 and above, because a lot of us are level 1, but either way, we're looking forward to becoming level 2 or 3, and we're going to need this. So without further ado, if you could please all unmute yourselves. Yeah, not mute, I mean unmute, because we're going to give him a real round of applause because he deserves it. So unmute yourselves and then put your right hand and your left hand and go like this. Dow, thank you so much for being here. Dow, I hand you the mic.
Thank you very much for this warm introduction. Yeah, so mountain safety. It's nice to, first of all, thank you so much for starting this instructor podcast. It's really, really valuable, I think, for all of us, and a nice way to connect. And I can already see a lot of faces I've seen before. It's nice to see them again. Yeah, so in this podcast, actually, I already wanted to share about mountain safety before. After this winter, we had a lot of travels. And after these travels, we had so much improvement in just the preparation and also the safety. It really worked well. And I also heard about some other attempts to climb the mountain. So it's, this winter in the Corona year became really popular to walk up Śnieżka. So not just Wim Hof method, but also just Polish people without knowing the Wim Hof method, walking up. And also this winter, many, many people had to be saved by the mountain rescue service because they weren't unprepared and did not have clothes with them, or did not check the weather, did not know how to do it. Maybe taken once an ice bath before and then walked up the mountain. So for me, I already wanted to share in some way with instructors the things that I learned over, I think now 28 times climbing a mountain, Wim Hof style. Because when I look back at my first times and also the first times guiding people, I'm happy that not something really bad went wrong, or not that nothing went wrong or too wrong, and that we all survived. Because it's beautiful, like walking up the mountain is a really special experience, and every time has been really special. And it's for most people the adventure of their lifetime. But at the same time, yeah, it's still a very cold mountain that can be very dangerous. So the challenge for me will be to tell the most important points in 20 minutes. Like I could talk about mountain preparation for days or weeks. But I try to limit it mainly to the what's, so like the most important takeaways, what you need to think of. So focus for now less on how you exactly implement it, a little bit of the why it's important. Well, it's important to give people a good experience and a safe experience. So for mountain safety and especially for guiding people up a mountain, I divide it in 4 different parts. So there's, first of all, just knowing your stuff. being able to climb the mountain yourself, knowing the mountain, then having the right gear, then being able to prepare people well so that they're ready to face this adventure. And then lastly, the way that you guide people on the mountain itself. Good. The first two are quite short, and the second, I'll see how much time I have to go deeper into them. So first of all, before you even think of course, of organizing a retreat, you should have walked up the mountain yourself in shorts, and of course have plenty of experience walking around in cold landscapes. Also, it's just good to know the mountain very well. So 2 weeks ago, we for the first time took a group on a different mountain. And before we took the group there, we had been there many times, climbed the mountain 4 times to see different ways, different paths to walk up, different weather conditions. So first, before you even consider starting a travel, it's good to have the experience of walking up in shorts, to have joined a winter travel so that you know how the experience feels like as a participant, that you know what different skills you need for different techniques you can use to climb up. Then, of course, to know the mountain that you will climb and to know also different places in case something happens, where you can go, what the rescue service number is, how you can get people down if somebody breaks a leg. And of course, to know the different weather conditions and to know the weather. So first of all, know your stuff, have the experience and know the place very well. Then secondly, the gear you need for a mountain. Of course, in the end, you can compensate everything with toughness, but it's still good to have winter clothes. This is something that went wrong in first winter travels. When there are people from Australia that bring their winter clothes, for example, and the winter clothes in Australia might not be suitable for a very cold mountain in Europe. So to specify, it's important to specify for participants what it means to have good winter clothes, to have a jacket, to have gloves, or even better, to have mittens, to have a hat. And then for Snezka, I really recommend good crampons. So these little spikes that you put under your shoes. In the beginning, we didn't have them. And then we got the ones with the little knobs, but they are also not so much help. So you want the ones in between. I can maybe later send a link of the type I mean, but not the huge spikes that you could use as a weapon. Not the ones with the little knobs, but like the good middle size crampons. And especially when it's very icy, it's important that all participants have crampons. It makes a huge difference in how you walk up a mountain. Yeah, so crampons, winter clothes. As an instructor, it's good to have some of these hypothermia blankets. Of course, have a first aid kit. Depending on group size and amount, and it can be nice to have walkie-talkies, some extra snacks, extra clothes. Yeah, just some basic gear that is good to tell people before they come and to specify exactly what they should have. So once that is established, once you have the experience, once you have sent out the participants your packing list and they come to the retreat, then really the mountain preparation starts. And in a way, that's the most exciting part. Like climbing the mountain doesn't start just like with an ice bath. Teaching people how to go in an ice bath doesn't start just before the ice bath. It starts the beginning of the workshop when you create, in a way, a frame for how you go into all kinds of adventures. And with preparing people, you want to give them, of course, the right training in the cold, that they learn how to deal with the cold and learn how to relax in the cold instead of fighting it or freeing from it. So you want to give them enough cold experience that they learn how to deal with, that they have success moments in the cold, but also some challenges that they know what happens when it's maybe a little bit too cold, to give them maybe a little bit of afterdrop, so they know that it's okay, that they know how they can warm up. So basically of course, you want to give them cold training, but even more important is you want to give them the right mindset before they walk up the mountain. And for me, the right mindset means there's no top fever. And this is something that you see in some people already come with it to a retreat. Some Wim Hof instructors maybe make it bigger or can make it smaller, but this top fever of this urge to really reach the top, that you've only succeeded once you reach the top. And this can be really dangerous. And it's something you can work with in the preparation, that it's not important to people to reach the top. You can give these great examples of heroes like Wim Hof, who's on Everest very high, but then realizes it's not wise to continue further because his foot is hurting and he's listening to his body. And by giving these examples, for example, you can change this top fever to we follow whatever our limit is and we respect our limits. And something I like to say is that Mount Shneska will always win in the end. So we are not conquering a mountain. We're just sometimes Shneska is allowing us up and sometimes not. We're just following it and respecting it. And both ways, it's a beautiful experience when it's really, really cold and windy and you're forced to return earlier. It's very humbling and very nice in that sense. You really feel the power of nature. And another time, it's just nice to see a view from the top. But it's very important to make it clear that it's not the goal to reach the top. It's a goal to have this adventure and to see where your real limits are or where your perceived limits are, to overcome these perceived limits, but listen to the real limits. So a right mentality will be not having this top fever, not having the need to reach the top to have a successful experience. Another, in a way, mentality that is to me very important when walking up the mountain is this going as one group. And already in a day workshop, you have this beautiful buildup where you can create a safe group, and it's very important to create a safe group. And for me, it's even more important when walking up a mountain. I don't feel ready to walk up a mountain until the group feels really like a group. Then they can carry each other, they can take care of each other and also support each other mentally, emotionally, with sounds, but also physically. If something would go wrong, they are there for each other. My challenge is not to go into all the different hows of how to create a group, which is the exciting part, but it's important to create a group and to really go together as a group. So in the first years of climbing mountains, there was no group at all. We would spread out and there could be maybe a kilometer between the first and the last person. I don't know if it was really a kilometer, could be, or a perceived kilometer, but everybody was going for themselves. And then sometimes you could not see if somebody would be really cold and in need of help. So we always walk in a very tight group. So if I teach it together with Josefina, then usually she's in front, I walk in the back, and it's very easy to see everybody still. And this can be a challenge for some people because people have a different pace. And there might be people that want to go faster. And then it's important to give them this feeling, hey, we do this as a tribe. We go together as a tribe. If you have a need for a faster pace, you're probably strong and you have this extra challenge of walking slow. And that this realization is there, that we really go as one group to get her up. Even when some people, especially, and that's again the top fever, especially when the people need to turn back, there might be some people that could still continue, but this realization that the group cannot continue, which makes it a different view for them and easier for them to accept that it's time to put on clothes or to turn back. So these different mindsets help it to create a nicer feel for walking up. And it's more a unity and a group experience, but at the same time, it creates this extra safety for when something goes wrong. And decisions need to be made fast, it's easier for people to comply with your decisions. Also very clear to make sure that you are in charge. So if they need to put on clothes, that they will put on clothes. But this, so in your preparation of the week, it's good to create this mentality that it's not a top fever. You create this bond, this group together, that they will walk together up. And then, of course, you give them the right cold training, that they know how to deal with after drop, they know what after drop is. They get all these different strategies that they're prepared to walk up the mountain and relax into it instead of they're fighting or freezing. In the preparation, another important part is just a real mountain preparation. And usually we do that with a test walk, where we walk up, let them experience maybe some failures. We don't explain too much, so that they can experience some challenges. And especially what can be challenging is putting on your crampons, especially when the crampons are at the bottom of your backpack. It's hard to put them on fast because you need to take everything out of your backpack. But it's good that people have experience with putting on their crampons, that they can even do it when their hands and fingers are very cold, that they know where the crampons are and they can still put it on when it's needed. That they also know how to pack their backpack, that the most important things are above and then the less important things are below. So for the people that have never climbed a mountain before, so my main talk is for people that have climbed mountains before and want to take a group up. But if you haven't climbed a mountain before, usually we take clothes with us. It's a surprise sometimes for people. It's also good to tell your participants beforehand. I know some instructors who did not take a jacket to the mountain experience because they thought they did not need it. So usually we walk up to the top and put on clothes there, or we walk up to the top and a bit down and put on clothes there. Sometimes when it's very cold, you need to put on clothes before, but it's always good to have clothes on. In the test folk, it's good that they also practice putting clothes on, so they see when they're a bit cold how challenging it can be, and that it makes a lot of sense to put your jacket somewhere where you can easily reach it. There are so many times where so an example I want to give where this was not really the case. There was somebody who packed his clothes really, really perfectly in these, I think called Ziploc bags, which is very challenging to open, especially when your hands are very cold. And a test walk just makes it very clear for them what is needed on the mat. It also gives more confidence, but a lot of just very more logistical, practical skills for walking up. Yeah, so the first part was know your stuff, then having the right gear, then preparing the people that they have the right mentality. And the right mentality also means they can be a little bit scared, but at the same time feel confident that they can do it. If they feel too confident, I become less confident with taking them up. So I try to find the right balance of a bit scared or having respect for the mountain, but at the same time, this confidence of we can do this. And it helps then if there's a strong group. It helps if the days before they have already conquered different challenges and gives this feeling of we can go with challenges. We know what to do and we know how to also listen to the body. So another mental aspect, not it's mental, but this feeling is understanding is really important, and to give them the choice that they go up the mountain. It's not they go up the mountain because I tell them to go up, but to give them in a way the responsibility for themselves, to give them the option. You can choose how many clothes you put on, or but if you ever want to put on clothes during the walk, you can do so. If you have doubts, you can ask, but otherwise they have the responsibility. If they feel they cannot do it anymore, they can put on clothes. So it makes it also a bit more safe because they can feel they can also feel themselves, maybe I'm too cold now, When I don't see it, they can feel it themselves. This is where most of the magic happens. This is where, to me, you prepare really a group for the mountain. And then if the group is well prepared, then walking up the mountain is easy. You don't need to do much as a guide. Then the last part, of course, is the cherry on the cake, is walking up with a group. And there are some things that are, there are many things that can be said again, and some things that are important, and it is to understand, for me, my role as an instructor. And for me, my role is to provide safety and also to provide, of course, the guidance, literal guidance of where to go, where to walk, and some mental support. So in the beginning, as instructors, we would always walk up in shorts because that's the point, it's the challenge, and now we never do it. Some people still do it, and it's debatable. For me, it's very clear that I should be in clothes. So if something goes wrong or if people need help, then I can easily help them. You walk up in shorts, it's harder to have this control over your hands to close or open clothes. So for me, it's a very clear, or this is very important to me, this understanding your role. And there are arguments for walking in shorts. You can feel the temperature better. And it's also just really fun, and you can show the people how to do it. But you can also quite well see the temperature when you have your clothes on. And when the weather changes fast, it's just really important to be ready to help people. So woke up in clothes. Of course, also nice to have enough helpers for your participants. What enough is something to think for yourself. We have usually 3 people for a group of 12, which is probably quite many for more than average. But it just makes me feel more safe and makes it easier for me to guide people up. Yet I know if something goes wrong, I can help. And we also have a mountain guide with us that takes pictures, and it has a double advantage. And when something goes wrong, he is there to help. He knows the security or the mountain safety. And at the same time, he takes care of the pictures, so people don't need to take pictures and they can just focus on their own process and don't have to take selfies and get themselves or others out of focus. Yeah, I think those are, I went very fast over it because I want to give as many like pointers. How am I on the time, Francesco?
You are a bit over time, but that was so filled with knowledge, experience, tips. I mean, feeling is understanding. No Ziploc baggies, okay? No Ziploc baggies. Medium-sized crampons and do it yourself before you guide. I mean, there's my list of notes here is so awkwardly long that I know that I have more preparation now because of it. So amazing, amazing, amazing. I do have a few questions, but I would love to keep this open for everyone else.
Yeah.
And I could always ask you towards the end.
For the list, I also wrote a list. Maybe we can somehow link it to the...
Oh, that would be amazing. You don't mind? That would be really, really good.
That is just an easier way. I now went fast over it because I want to... It's mainly the what. These are all things to take into account. But now for the questions, we can maybe go a little bit more into the how. And also stories on why I find these things important. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I have a few questions, but like I said, I'm going to wait until the end and we'll talk about the list another time. But anyone, please, the floor is yours to pick his brain gently.
Yeah. I'm going to just jump right into it. Dawe, thanks for sharing all this amazing stuff with us. I have a question. You said like you guide them a little bit into the after drop experience. I want to ask you, do you have a protocol? How you do it exactly?
Two things, or two exercises I like to do with them. One is some kind of longer ice bath challenge, so that it's not really an after drop. But at the same time, there's a high chance of they will shiver a bit, or some of them will shiver. Another experience that I like to give them is this. Usually I tell them this mantra of, it is not over yet. Some of you know this very well from travels, but this is really important to me that they understand this for the mountain. Because if you think that the journey is over when you reach the top, then you have a big problem with the after drop. And it's something that happened a lot in the beginning also to me, that we would walk up the mountain all the time. You had this picture of the top is coming. And then at some point you reach the top and you're really happy. And then you put on your clothes. And that is, in a way, that is where the real challenge starts. Because when you don't have this focus of, you have the feeling, it's over now, but it's not over. You're only halfway. So I always tell people that it's only over once you're back home, warm and safe. And it's something you can tell people and they'll say, yeah, we know. So I like to give them some kind of experience there as well, that they have a little bit of a maybe fuck up moment with thinking it's over, but it's not over yet. So in the test walk, and it's not necessarily after drop, but it's more a mental fuck up. To realize again and again, you need to check in. Some of you know this experience. I know Sonja had this experience and wrote about it in a book. But so for example, what we did in a Wim Hof instructor travel was take people out into the water, let them walk back and work a lot with insecurity, not knowing when it ends, when it doesn't end. And then walking back towards the hotel, and then at the thought of, we can now go back into the hotel, but then first walk very, very slowly around the hotel. So to have this mental fuck up of thinking, now I can be warm, but no, you can't. And usually in a test walk, I play around with some kind of mental fuck up. In a very safe, physically safe environment, I give a mental challenge to prepare them in a way for, again, needing to realize, it's not over. I need to check in, I need to relax again. I need to find ways to keep warm. Because something like that can happen on the mountain when the weather changes or when you're really cold and you put on clothes, and that happens automatically. So I like to create this mental fuck up. And then maybe in another sense, in another day, more the physical exercise of doing a longer ice bath, maybe in a group do a longer ice bath. It could just be a 5-minute ice bath and people will already have some, 5 minutes is still quite long in the water there. People will have enough shivers that they need to deal with it. Yeah, very extensive answer to your question.
Great question. Awesome. That definitely is a great question. The floor is still open for questions before I jump in.
Yeah, I do have one. Sorry. So who's first?
Should I go first?
Yeah, go first.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Patrick. I was just wondering about how cold is it? Has it to be safe, and also with the wind cooling, and for how long?
Mm-hmm. That is a good question. I cannot answer it completely. It depends, and I don't have a large enough sample size to. to say it for sure. Yeah. it's something to try out. Yeah, I'm thinking if I want to give you some random numbers, but I haven't considered this enough.
But when do you decide, okay, it's cold enough, put on clothes?
I look at the people. Yeah, so it's not dependent on the outside temperature so much as to see how people are dealing. And that's a very good question. So how do you see if it's enough for a person or not? And I look at how, what I usually do is just while we're walking up a mountain, making eye contact with people. And, or I just look at the whole picture of them walking up. And in that, I have already quite a good picture of how they're dealing. And I want to look at, of course, two things, how they're dealing physically, they're shivering or not. But for me, the main thing is how they're dealing mentally with the challenge. And even when people are physically doing completely well, it can be that they have mentally already given up. And then that means more, is for me more an indicator that it's time for them to put on clothes than if they're shivering or if they look cold. So you can see in people how they're dealing with the cold, if they're struggling, but still struggling, or struggling their way through, they have a difficult time, but they are going for it, or if they are somewhere, have given up, or preferably want to give up, if they're really fighting, or if they are just in a way trying to flee from the cold. And mainly I look at what their mindset is at that moment. And if their mindset, it's a very tricky thing to explain, and it's a very important question. But it's in a way also looking at how people are in an ice bath. When they are relaxed, good. When they're not relaxed, you either need to coach them or get them out. Yeah. Does it answer more or less your question?
Yes, thank you. But one additional, because I haven't myself gone up Mount Snezka. How long does it take?
Yeah, so Mount Snezka, depending on the speed of the group, is like 2 hours, can be more, 2.5 hours, can be a lot longer when you have some people with walking problems. Yeah, so more or less that. Then with Snezka, it's special, and mountains in general, they tend to go, becomes more difficult and difficult. So the first part, you walk up and you just get warm from walking. Then at some point you get away from the trees and the wind gets stronger. And then special about Snezka, and also about 2 weeks ago, I climbed Brocken in Germany. They are very windy mountains. And the top is the most challenging part. There is where the training comes in. The walking up, in the beginning, it's a bit scary. And then people start to walk and they get into a rhythm and they find their own way to deal with the cold. And they make jokes or they become silent. And then at some point, after an hour or so, some people are like, oh, how long is it going to take? And then they need to get again and again into this accepting of the cold. And then the top is special because there it really, focus really matters. The wind usually gives you a lot of focus if there's a lot of wind and it brings you into your body, but it also cools you down fast. And sometimes I decide to let people dress up on the top itself. Sometimes it's better to go away from the top first, find a place outside of the wind and put on clothes there. What was your question again? How long does it take? 2.5 hours, 3 hours, something like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Dawa. So I did the master's module with you in Spain. So I haven't had the fortune to hike up Śnieżka so far. I thought about doing it together with a fellow instructor, let's say just the two of us, and of course doing it in Wim Hof style. So what are your thoughts about, is it better, or is it in terms of safety, if you haven't done anything like this before, doing it just like from the start, just in shorts, that's it? Or would you rather say, don't go full in, like on the first try, because there's no instructor with us or anyone that can help.
There are some ways to train it. It's still useful in a way to go with a certified instructor or with somebody who has a lot of experience going up the mountain. Because there are some, in a way, you can also learn a lot from just self-experimenting, for sure. I mean, I also did not have Edwin with me who would guide the group and walk in front and say, okay, just do it, and just be the motivator. So we all know Wim can do it and many other people can do it. So in that sense, you can learn. And but some best practices are useful, because you don't know yet. So for me, the main thing that people forget is it's not over yet. And it's really a mantra you should repeat when you walk up a mountain. And especially when you take on clothes, then the real challenge starts. I do recommend going with an instructor. I think there are also possibilities. I mean, you could meet up with other instructors and maybe guide each other. When I started thinking about mountain safety, in my head, I was already thinking, how could I teach this to people? So maybe in 2 years or so, or in next year, I might make a winter travel, especially to guide people to walk up a mountain. I need to think about that. But I can recommend, especially, it depends also, if you want to do it for the experience itself, of walking up the mountain, you could do it this way. You could also do it probably better that one of you is in close and the other walks up and you can guide each other this way. You can do a small mountain first and then walk up. There are some possibilities, definitely. If you want to guide people for an experience, then it's good to definitely experience the winter travel yourself as well. Because then you can also feel how it is from a participant perspective, how people guide and how people prepare you to go.
Cool, thank you so much. That was amazing. We have 5 more minutes left. Does anyone else have a question before I throw mine in there? Perfect, so I get to ask my question now. It's 2 questions, actually. Will you be able to share the crampon size, middle size crampon link with us so I could throw it in the Google, into the YouTube link? Yes, so that if anyone is hearing this, they can always find it, because it might be better for you. If you don't have to do it now. We could just so anyone who's listening.
I have the link here. With us.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And I'll throw this into the link inside the YouTube so then anyone can click on that if they want to just have that direct access. My question is, I actually did the winter expedition with you and Daniel, and of course with Wim and a whole bunch of other people. And I remember there were 2 men in front of me and 2 behind me, and they weren't focused, which is okay. Everyone has a different style. How would you recommend as an instructor to help them get into focus? Because me and my partner, we really wanted to be silent, and we kept doing hum.
Yes.
Whenever they started talking about, oh, this is easy. I remember he goes, this is easy. And then I would just go hum. I would get really loud. Hum.
Yes.
They're like, don't enter my brain. Don't enter my brain. My question to you, what do you do? Because I'm not really the silent someone kind of guy. But what do you do?
First of all, in the test walk, I let people experience different ways of walking. So there will be, when we have the test walk, for one part, people will walk in silence. And I just tell them to all walk in silence and they can experience what it feels to them. There will also be some people talking. I'll give some suggestions on where to bring your focus or different ways of breathing while walking. And then after the silence, they can walk in whatever way feels best for them at that moment. So that all people at least have experience with different ways of walking.
Okay.
And then when we walk up the mountain or before we walk up the mountain, so of course mention there are different ways and find your own way. And if you want to be silent, you can be silent. If you want to talk, you can talk. Then of course it's tricky when people are talking, and it's talking can help and joking can really help. Humming can help, shouting ooh ah can help, but it can also distract, can distract others or it can distract yourself. You can shout focus at them, but it doesn't help so much. It's something I sometimes see instructors do, focus! And it brings somebody completely out of their focus when they're focused. Depends on the situation.
It depends. I love that. I remember when we were, it depends.
At the end, it's the answer on everything. It depends. Yeah.
Yeah, that way, can I mention something? Because it comes to me right now. To me, sometimes it's much easier when I distract myself to go along with the code. And maybe if we can bring this awareness to the people from the very beginning that we are different personalities and everybody has its own type of dealing with the code, this can maybe give more understanding of people that they want to stay, you know, silent and focus and don't get really so pissed off to someone that wants to talk and, you know, shout or whatever. Yeah, so exactly. Maybe if we can understand each other that we are different and dealing with the code in a different way, then maybe it's a way. But yeah, I found myself also like, for me, it's easier to distract myself and then I don't feel the code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. That was also what I meant in this test talk. Usually after the test talk, I ask them, so what worked for you and what did not work? And it's also a way to bring that in. And then some people can say that for them, the joking works. Another person can say, for me, the silence works. And then it's like you said, Sonia, there's this understanding. And also usually it gives some understanding to people like, actually when I was talking, I had a harder time. And then have this, okay. And sometimes talking can be really helpful because it can bring you out of this, I'm focused on the cold and it's all very cold, or I'm
serious mindfulness. Yeah.
And then just helps you to snap out when you make a joke.
Yeah, just bring some playfulness to the process.
Yeah. But sometimes it can also, there are some people that have a hard time feeling what their needs are. And then they're just like, blah, 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 talking, until the hammer comes of, whoa, it's really cold. And they need some moments of, how am I actually doing? Yeah, 2 weeks ago, there was a person. and then, in a way, as an instructor, to allow, like you said, it's very important to allow different personalities having their own strategies and to create a space where also for all the people, it's okay that different people have their own strategies. And at the same time, as a group, there might be a tendency towards one of the things. And then as an instructor, you can guide a little bit towards one or another energy. If the group becomes very serious and very silent, you can make jokes and change it a little bit. If they are laughing all the time, and you know that on the top there will be a lot of wind, it's good to bring maybe some more seriousness in.
Thank you so much for everyone's input in that, and that leads us to unfortunately say see you later, which means thank you so much, Dao, from the bottom of my heart for everyone here and for everyone listening. I really know that this is super valuable because, like I said, when you step out of being instructor training, and then now you want to just know about this, or if you want to do your first mountain expedition with a couple of people, this is definitely great tips. I'm going to put all your lists in the YouTube link along with the crampons. And if everyone could just unmute yourself, because it's really important to let Dao know that we really appreciate his preparation, his time, and his effort to put.
Can I just add something little? No.
Oh, as long as it's little, can't be big.
Okay, I'm just a new instructor.
Congratulations.
I haven't had my first workshop yet, but I just wanted to do, tell my experience. I'm Peruvian original, and I did the Inca trailer to go to Machu Picchu. You know, like it's 4 days. 4 days here. At the time, I didn't know anything about Wing Hop. And what really helped me is because it's about 6,000 steps a day, and you go up and down, up and down. So actually, in the second day, even if you want to go back, like you said, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, it would be the same challenge. So then it's really your instinct of surviving, because you know, you just have to keep going because you are in the middle. And I'm a yoga, Ashtanga yoga practitioner, and that's what it helped me a lot to keep going and get all the challenge. So I think yoga as is a very important part of Wing Hop as well, is very important. But sometimes we have to just get your, yeah, that everybody say, the way you feel, you know? And also another challenge over there about clothes, when you're talking about clothes, is that when you go to Machu Picchu, it's like, you can actually get a sunburn and then you can be really cold at the back, you know? So it's this change of weather all the time. Cold and hot. So you just have to have a t-shirt and a very good jacket, and you can do this change all the time. So I just wanted to share that, you know. And
thank you, Gavina. I want to go to Machu Picchu. I want to go to Machu Picchu now, and I want to get sunburned.
Most incredible. Yeah, because I grew up in Peru, so. Like, I mean, we would go like at the end of our high school, go to Machu Picchu. And then it's another mountain behind, Huayna Picchu, that now they close it because they said it's too dangerous, but we used to run around. So sometimes it's your instinct, you know, like the way you feel, like you say, and that's very important. And I think yoga helps a lot. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Francesco, that's a lot. I got a question. What time did you guys start? I thought I had you starting at 2:45 Eastern.
8:45 p.m. Berlin time. And so if you ever go, whoever's listening or watching, if you ever go online and say time difference between, let's say, New York City and Berlin, it'll show you the time difference. And
yeah, I thought I had it right, man. I missed it by an hour. Maybe something shifted. I don't know. But so it's what time Berlin time?
So 8:45 Berlin time, same time, same place, same link, always.
Sorry about that.
The link will be shared in a few minutes. But if everyone could unmute themselves and give Dao a huge round of applause, because I really appreciate this. Hey.
Thank you so much.
I'll watch it back.
If you're interested in joining and becoming a guest, just email me. And for next week, I already gave you a little bit of insight. We're going to have a guest speaker speak about the vulnerability of being a female instructor, but not only about being a female, just being vulnerable in general as a participant and an instructor, especially when it comes to the part of taking off our clothes and people possibly looking at another participant or instructor in a certain way. So it's going to be really interesting talk, and I think it's super important too. So please join us next week, and just really appreciate you guys being here every week, making this happen. So big, big hug. And I hope to see you next week. Thank you, Dao.
Thanks, Francesco.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks,
great
man.
Job.
Thank you.
All right. Ciao, ciao.